I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. And today on What It Takes, we're talking with someone who's made a career out of helping leaders stop avoiding the tough stuff and start showing up for real. Jonathan Raymond is the founder and CEO of Ren AI. It's a coaching tech company based in San Diego, California. Before that, he was a lawyer in Manhattan, a tech entrepreneur, a nonprofit executive, you name it. But through it all, he kept coming back to one truth: leadership without authenticity doesn't work. Jonathan's the author of Good Authority and the creator of the Just Say It movement, which is all about the power of honest conversation at work, especially the kind that makes your palms sweat a little. In today's episode, we're digging into what it takes to build a culture of courage, how Jonathan helps companies stop avoiding hard feedback, and why emotional intelligence might just be the most important leadership skill that nobody's training for. Oh, and we'll also hear how financial planning ties into authentic leadership. And yes, it does. So let's jump in. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I want to talk about your diverse path. I mean, you've got law, you've got tech, nonprofit leadership. What's the moment that made you say, I want to help leaders, other leaders, just kind of like get real? I mean, that's really what this is all about, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it really came from in my first stint as a CEO, the first real kind of executive job that I had. I was running a company. This was back in the early, like 2010, 2011. And, you know, driven CEO, you know, working crazy hours, doing all the things, a couple hundred employees in the company. And I just could see the wheels coming off of our culture. And I didn't know how to talk to people in a way that was actually going to create change. I knew how to drive results. I knew how to be demanding. I knew how to be aggressive and push, but I didn't know how to strike the right balance. And I didn't know how to develop people, even though it's ironic because my background was in therapy and training and meditation and yoga. And I had done all of this work personally to work on myself and how to help other people, but I just couldn't translate it into the professional context. So I was like, I was kind of this split personality between, you know, what does it take to help somebody grow outside of work? And then I just didn't know how to apply those things at work. And so I thought, this is crazy. There's got to be a way to do this. I looked around, you know, of course, there's a million books on leadership and none of them really, there's a lot of great stuff out there, but none of them really spoke to this specific problem that I had, which is how do I develop people in a way that honors the ambition and the drive that I have as a founder, as a CEO, but how do I do that in a way that meets them where they are? And that was the moment where I thought, okay, I suck at this. And I think I'm a pretty well-intentioned, you know, I'm good at doing my research. Maybe this is a bigger problem than I think. And, you know, over the last 15 years, I've realized it's a huge problem and fairly universal among leaders.
Yeah. So how did you get to that point then? Because I think it's one thing to go down that journey of, hey, I really need to improve myself, and you kind of look inward and you go down that journey, then to kind of switch that path to say, you know, I want to help other leaders learn the same things that I've just been. Like, how do you recognize that that's even a need?
You know, for me, I just came to this place where helping other people was more meaningful than helping myself. And I didn't grow up in a world like that. I didn't grow up in a world where service was the thing, even though, you know, my mom was a psychologist and she helped people, but it was different. And I never imagined myself to be in that place in my career where I was going to draw more meaning from helping somebody else change than I was from like spending more time on myself. And I think I just hit my own I got to a baseline, not finished product and not perfect, but I got through a lot of my own stuff and I did a lot of work on myself. And it just happened naturally where I just felt like, oh, I want to give this experience to other people. And the more that I would do that, the more meaning I would have in my life. The more I would talk to a leader and they said, you know, Jonathan, that was a really helpful conversation. I know we were talking about work, but this actually really helped me with my teenager. And I thought, oh, okay, well, now this is doing something good in the world. And I've been doing it for long enough to realize that, you know, sometimes you make a lot of money doing that. Sometimes you don't. It's a bumpy path when you choose service as your primary motivator in life, but the meaning is always there. And so that's why I do it.
And you kind of had that foundation in nonprofit leadership as well. So I'm not surprised that it kind of, you know, stayed with you along the way. And I like that point that you made about somebody coming to you about that helping with their kid, because I do see a lot of similarities in a lot of these situations. It's not at all the same. You know, your employees or people that you work with are not your children by any means. But there's a lot of similarities in some of those dynamics with authority and also when it comes to responsibility. And as a parent, you know, there are things that happen that you face, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I feel like I've said that every single podcast for the last, you know, however many weeks back, because it just keeps coming up. And so whether you're facing life's uncertainties or your business, you know, obstacles that come along your way, how you handle those things, there's a lot of commonalities in the way that you communicate, the way that you, you know, like you were saying, like, hey, I need to develop some of these skills that translates really well to being a parent, being a leader, being, you know, somebody in the workforce. That I really like that you said that's what kind of clicked for you is, hey, this stuff might be working because it worked on somebody's kids. But really, I think it kind of goes both ways. I see a lot of things, people make that connection when they're like, oh yeah, I do that with my kids. And I'm like, great. So why don't you do that with the people that report to you, you know, because it's the same type of thing. And I think it's because we just look at our personal lives maybe a little bit differently than our professional lives or whatever. But you've seen that struggle with authenticity, right? I kind of talked about that in the intro a little bit. Why do you think so many leaders struggle with authenticity, even when they have the best intentions? Like I was saying, I think people see that they're one way with their kids, but maybe not that way with the people that they work with, but they're the same person. So are you seeing anything, any ties to that?
The most common flaw in us as leaders, and it has something to do with drive. It has something to do with our ambition. It has something to do with what we're trying to do in the world and the impact we're trying to have, is that we mistake talking about fear, talking about anxiety, talking about depression. We mistake talking about those things. We think that's weakness, and it's actually strength. It's the doorway to strength. And leaders, we just have so few at-bats. We have so little experience that tells us that that's true. We have tons of experience, which tells us just keep moving forward. Don't look over there. Like, just keep going. And we don't have a lot of experience or at-bats in ourselves to see, you know, when I actually opened up with that person and I shared with them my concern, the relationship got better, like instantly. But we just don't have that much experience with it. And so we tend to avoid it because it's the unknown. And so a lot of the work that I'm doing with leaders, which I, you know, do in myself, is how do we lean into those moments where we think the right answer is to try to control the outcome, which rarely, if ever, works, when almost always the right answer is to share something about our perception of what the problem is. Just talk about what the problem is. Just talk about what you're noticing. Just name your observation. Just talk about a concern that you have or a worry that you have and watch what happens. You will get a level of engagement. You'll get people leaning in to the conversation instead of armoring themselves and getting defensive. And it's so simple. It's right under our noses. It was right under my nose for a decade. And if you told me, Jonathan, all you need to do is that, I would have said, yeah, Jamie, that's nice, but I'm going to keep doing it my way. Until something happens, until you crash against your own failure and you actually are open to another way, then you'll try something like this and you'll be like, well, I could have been doing this for the last 20 years. My life, the outcomes of my life would be way better if I knew how to create results using this different algorithm.
Wow, that's really good. But how do you coach someone to lead with emotional intelligence like that when they're used to managing by like metrics and KPIs and, you know, that kind of stuff?
I mean, usually I try not to be snarky about it, but I'll be like, well, how's that going for you? Right? And it's usually not going very well, right? Can't sleep, results suck, or they're inconsistent, people are leaving, attrition, losing my best people, keeping my worst people, expenses going too much, projects overrun, but like whatever. Like, okay, how about we change that? Right. And it's a little bit of a self-selecting group, right? Because people don't come to me with like, hey, everything's good, I don't need any help. Usually it's people who are honest with themselves to some degree, be like, you know what, Jonathan, it's kind of messed up right now and I could really use some help and I'm open to a fresh perspective. So my audience tends to be self-selecting in that way of people who've maybe read one of my books or been, seen me on a podcast like this and said, all right, I'm not going to bother calling this guy unless I'm up for some real talk.
Okay. So I think that that's good, but being open to that perspective and actually seeing, you know, hard financial outcomes, that's a totally different thing. So I think somebody can be open to it, but culture, I think just especially workplace culture, it feels all this stuff feels like a soft topic, right? Mm. So how do you connect those dots between emotionally intelligent leadership and hard financial outcomes?
Yeah. Just as a minor aside, it's interesting. Somebody pointed out to me, I can't remember who wrote about this recently, but the term soft skills and hard skills actually comes from machine world, where I think it was from the military, but it was from early industry where this using the machines was actually the hard skills, because you were literally working on the hard things and everything else was considered the soft skills, not because it was soft and fuzzy and new agey, like the way we kind of associate it with today. Anyway, so a lot of times, you know, when it comes to financial outcomes and you look at whatever those metrics are, the refrain that I often hear from leaders, and you don't have to go very far to kind of get underneath the surface of this. I was like, well, what are the results? Well, you know, X number of units per month. Okay, what do the results need to be? Well, it needs to be X times 1.15%. And that's what our goals are. Okay, cool. What do you think it's going to take to get that result? The answer is always behavioral. And so it's actually not that difficult a conversation. Like, so do you think you're not doing enough advertising? No, we are. Do you think you have enough salespeople? Yeah, we probably do. Do you think the product more or less does what it says? Yeah, more or less. We're always making improvements, et cetera, et cetera. So what's actually the problem? Well, the problem is we're not having critical conversations with our customers, or we are not really listening to their complaints in a way that helps us create, you know, the right improvements to the product or the service. We're not really listening to feedback as an organization, or, you know, any number of things, but it's always behavioral. So whenever I'm with a group of leaders, we get very quickly to this conversation where they will admit, Jonathan, you know what? We are way too focused on the outcomes. We got the KPIs, the OKRs, the dashboards, we got all these tools. We can obsess about the numbers all day long, but all we're doing is repeating ourselves. Oh, we need to make the numbers go up, numbers go up, numbers go up. Doesn't work. And we all know, it's like an open secret. Everybody knows the reason why the numbers aren't going up is behavioral. It has to do with people and teams and collaboration and listening and curiosity and assertiveness and, you know, all of those things. That's what we have to work on. So it's a false door that everybody shows you at first. Well, we got to create these. Well, yes, I get it. What do you think it's going to take to actually create those results? People have to change behavior.
Yeah, it's the how. It's definitely, the what is definitely important. You definitely have to have the goals. You definitely have to track them regularly, know what they are. But how are you going to get from point A to point B is the thing that I think you're absolutely right. And I think one big mistake that I see leaders make, and you know, you can tell me if you see this too, is when, okay, so let's get them to say, you're right, it is behavioral. And so then instead of adapting this, you know, what you're putting forward is, hey, we need to change how we're talking to these people and engaging with them and have these hard conversations. It's like, oh, well, it's the person then. We just need to replace the person. So when it comes to scaling a business, where do you see people make the biggest financial missteps, like from a leadership perspective in that? Is it with, you know, putting the blame on the people instead of the process or the way that they handle them or manage them? Or is it something else altogether?
There are a couple of things, but I would say one of the most common, nearly universal, so you take any group of, let's say any team of 10 people, you probably have two top performers, you have two serious underperformers, and you've got, you know, six-ish people in the middle that are good, but not great. But if you look at the amount of time The manager and the leader, how much time do they spend on those 10 people? They spend an inordinate amount of time on the bottom two people.
Yep.
Gossiping about them, talking about them, managing around them. They're spending 50% or more of their actual bandwidth, which they don't have enough of, they don't have very much of, on the people that should need a difficult conversation yesterday or a year ago, and they need a clear boundary. Here's what it's going to take to stay here. And if you can do it, great. And if you can't, you can't. And that's okay. You're a good person, but this isn't the right place or not the right time in your career, right? But we're so afraid to have those conversations. And what we don't realize is the impact of that mistake is it impacts the other eight people because they have to pick up the slack. And it's the two people at the top that have to pick up the most. There's the ones that are getting the most stressed out and the most overwhelmed because you refuse to hold those bottom two people accountable for actually showing up the way the team needs. So that's one of the most common phenomena. Now extract that out to an organization with 1,000 employees or 10,000 employees. Think how much time is being wasted on not having those conversations. People, I don't have time to have those conversations. Bullshit. You're spending so much time not having those conversations with all your workarounds and your manage arounds and your BS performance plans and all this kind of stuff. You got to get rid of all of it.
Yeah. And I always say, what does it cost you to not do it? Because a lot of people, I don't have the time. And then in that instance, it's costing them the time or whatever to manage it. But I'm like, right, but what is it costing you even in time and not managing it? Like you said, they're carrying it around with them. They're talking about other people. They're having to put out fires that, something may have happened. That's so true. You've mentioned the importance of being intentional with where the money goes in early growth phases. What are some strategies or principles that you advise your clients on with that?
These days, especially, you got to get together in person. You got to find a way to do in-person gatherings of some kind. Now, it's more complex when you've got hundreds and thousands of employees, obviously. But I personally think the most valuable thing that you can do as a leader team, if you have, if you're a business owner, you got a general manager, maybe a bunch of people, or your startup, you got a bunch of people, or maybe you're a large organization, you got an executive team, is you got to find a forum to get together without a business agenda. Because these days, when online Zoom meetings, team meetings, all the tools, we've become so transactional and we get so misaligned and there's no context of relationship, let alone friendship, camaraderie, trust. And without that context, these little things become so problematic. Whereas if you have a context for knowing each other, knowing what's going on in their life, knowing what matters to them, knowing why they think the way they do, how do they tell me about if when I'm there with a group of leaders, I'm facilitating conversations around tell me about your first boss, right? Tell me about the worst boss you ever had. What was that like? Tell me about the best boss. Tell me about a traumatic childhood experience about with authority that you could share with the rest of the group. And you see everybody's on the edge of their seat. Oh my God, me too. I can't wait to tell my version of this story. And then everybody gets to know each other. And then when, James does something weird, you're like, okay, well, I know why James is doing that. Let me just go talk to him because I know why he's, treating it this way. I can help him out. But in the absence of that personal glue and that context, things that are so small just become so large.
Yeah, they're telling you exactly what they need right then and there in that conversation. And if we don't listen to that, I think that's I love the line that you're drawing between having these types of conversations and then what do we do with them? Because I think that's the question that many people don't really truly connect is, great, what do I do with all of this information? And you've done a really good job of kind of, taking the transactional piece into, hey, we can't get the transaction that we want unless we go through this transformational piece too. And right. And so I'm really seeing a lot of that. I think it's wonderful, but I got to get to this signature question of ours because we ask all of our guests this, and the podcast is called What It Takes. So tell us, Jonathan, in your experience, what does it take to be a leader, a business owner in, in this culture and where we're at in this time?
Blind faith and taking out the trash. I would say it's you have to, there's a kernel of wisdom. There's something that you know to be true. There's something powerful that you want to put out in the world. There's an impact that you want to have. You can see it. You can feel it. You can put your virtual hands on it, but it's not yet real in the world. And it's not, or it's partially real, and it does, but it's not working the way you want it to. You got to hold on to that. And you got to hold on to it no matter what the world tells you. And doesn't mean don't listen. Doesn't mean don't adapt. Doesn't mean don't change and update your knowledge, but not your principles, right? And your principle and your value of what you know the world needs, that you and you alone have the ability to share your version of, to hold on to that. That's what it takes. And if you don't have that, if you're thrown, you won't make it. You won't survive. So you got to hold on to that. And then the other is the willingness to take out the trash, right? Like that, no, you know, I love, we used to work in physical buildings and there was the sign that says, or, you know, over the sink in the break room that says, you know, reminder, your mother doesn't work here, right? Like no entitlement. You're not better than anything. You're not better than anyone. You're not special. You can, should, and should want to do whatever it takes to make the business succeed, whether that's, you know, fixing a spreadsheet, you know, talking to a distressed customer, building a strategic vision, negotiating an exciting deal, whatever, right? Like literally what it takes is whatever it takes.
Yeah, that's so good. Listeners, I don't know about you, but I'm walking away this conversation thinking about the conversations that I haven't had. So I think Jonathan reminded us that real leadership isn't about having all the answers. It's about having the guts to show up really when it counts. And I think taking out the trash and doing what needs to be done, even if it doesn't seem like, you know, it's something that you really want to do, is still really important. So, and it is part of what it takes. If you guys want to learn more about his work or explore Ren AI, Jonathan, where can they find you if they're looking for you?
Yeah, so you can create a free account at tryren.com. So tryren.com. You can also find my personal work at jonathanraymond.com and also on Substack as well, hey.jonathanraymond.com. Those would be the three primary places where you can find me. But the Ren AI, which I'm really excited about, is it's really for exactly this. It's for the conversations you're not having and to get help from a coach that happens to be an AI on how to do it. And it's surprisingly effective.
Oh, I absolutely need that. And as always, thank you for listening to What It Takes. If you like this episode, share it with someone who's building something meaningful and needs to hear that it's okay just to say it. So until next time, we'll see you guys.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.